Praise the Lord. Welcome to the Front Runner Podcast. I am your host, Isaiah Marshall. And today we have a very special guest joining us, Front Runner, Mr. Mike O. This is part one of our two-part discussion. In this episode, Cultural Crossroads and Complicated Connections, we talk about faith, fatherhood, and the redemptive power of poetry. We show you how to run your race to win. This is Front Runner, episode 17. Praise the Lord. Welcome to the Front Runner Podcast. I am your host, Isaiah Marshall. And today we have a very special guest with us. We have a front runner. He's a spoken word artist, a creative storyteller, and just an overall dope creative and artist. We have Mike O with us today. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much just for having me up here. I really appreciate the fact that you want to learn more about my story and to share hopefully some very, very inspiring messages with the people so they can just connect with somebody else who is pretty much like them. Just want to do something better with your life and having to face obstacles and working through that.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I appreciate that. Well, I know they're going to be blessed. The listeners are going to be blessed for sure. So I'm originally from Detroit, Michigan. And, you know, one of the things that kind of helped shape, you know, who I am in a way is, you know, I was a track and field athlete. So I probably ran track for about 15 years of my life.
I ran track in high school. I actually ran track in high school. I was more the long distance person.
Gotcha.
Like, but I did like the 400, the 800 and the mile. And I did 4 years of cross country.
Well, I couldn't stand cross country, but
I was an
800, 400 runner myself.
Nice.
Yeah. But, you know, in track and field, there's this concept of front running. And, you know, track and field has taught me a lot about life, helped me, you know, kind of help shape the way I see things in a lot of ways. And so this concept of front runner. So, you know, if someone is a front runner in track and field, they're not really expected to win. The odds are against them. And so a lot of ways they take risk. They bet on themselves. They run their race and they run to win. And I think we can kind of apply this to life as well in the way we live our lives, because we have to take risks sometimes. We have to bet on ourselves. We have to learn how to run our race and run to win. And so thinking about this concept of a front runner, you know, I just wanted to, you know, start off by just, you know, just telling us a little bit about who Mike O is. You know, what was your upbringing like? What's your story?
Yeah. Okay. So fun fact is I was born in Tokyo. I was born in Tokyo, Japan. My father used to work for the United Nations. He's not alive, but while he was, he had amazing opportunities, which allowed his family to have amazing opportunities. So I was an international student.
Yeah.
I had some really, really fun times in my youth. In fact, most of my youth until probably the age of 10 was spent traveling.
Wow.
So I, with my family, with his line of work, mm-hmm. I remember in Canada we lived, I remember Nigeria we lived, and China. We lived in China for a couple of years. And so that was very interesting time in my life. And
so was this up until when you were 10 years old, you lived in all those places?
Yeah. Until I was 10. I of course in Japan, I don't remember that. I was too little to remember.
Right.
But until I was 10 years old, I lived in Japan, Nigeria, Canada, and China.
Okay.
Those places so far. You know, so my family is West African. My dad is from Nigeria, my mom's from Togo. And so that was it was like an international experience.
Yeah.
Being able to travel and experience different cultures. And then about age of nine, I came to the States.
Okay.
You know, then I spent most of my life here, living in the States. A little traveling, but most of my life has been here. So got my education, like elementary school, high school was international, of course, but here was, of course, high school and to college. It was definitely challenging adjusting at first. One of the challenges in a student has, or an international student has, is you used to having friends, and then all of a sudden you just don't have friends anymore. Like, and we this is before the days of the internet. So once you lost a friend, it was gone. They were gone. So you moving from me having, I remember, like I even remember the names of three good friends I had in China. And I'm like, I'll never, I don't know. I can't reach out to them. But having so much, having those bonds and then just up to another place, it's like it's a plus and minus. You learn, you have to adapt quickly and just, I'm in another place. Like I have to move on. And other times it's kind of sad because you can't form, you don't feel like you formed a lot of bonds. I don't feel you can form a lot of bonds because you don't know when you're just gonna be up and gone again. You just enjoy it. You enjoy it. You enjoy the time. You have fun. But then it's like, I gotta go. Gotta go again.
Now, how was that adjusting? I mean, when you came to the US, did you go, did you when you came to the US, did you go to New York? I know you
Yeah.
went to your,
Yes. 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 So I've lived in New York. I've been in New York most of my life. So when we came into New York, adjusting was definitely, it was new. It was exciting because, hey, it's that. Still a kid at the same time, no matter how sad he may feel. But I just remember like just the fact that it's new. But at the same time, it's awkward because you gotta find your way around here. I remember it was even tough getting into school because there's a lot of things I don't know. I don't know about geography. I don't know a lot of things about what, I remember there was trying to take a test. And it was like, certain things people probably would know living in New York or living in America. I'm like, I don't know that. I don't know American facts. I don't know anything except for that. All I remember was like, I used to get videotapes from people when I was in China. I remember people would send tapes, so I would see what was on American programming to watch, like cartoons. And all I remember is I want to go to McDonald's when I get there. I like McDonald's like a big deal. So I don't know. I don't. I it's a clean slate. All I know is from what I've seen, like on TV. And then you have to adjust with, meeting new people, meeting new friends, try to make friends, and just going through that whole experience.
Was it tough for you? I know, being transient a lot and then ended up in New York, was it kind of tough to establish those friendships? Did you have some kind of walls up because you didn't know if you was going to be moving again? Like, how was that dynamic?
For me, it's sort of like I said, it's sort of almost like a plus and minus. I think it's you have one side where you may not quick to you kind of have your walls up where you're just like, I don't know these people, whatever. But at the same time, since you're so used to it, it's like you kind of just go with the flow. This is what's normal. I don't think I had a hard time really. I thought I was more of an introverted kind. I do believe I'm more introverted kind of person. But my sister, who's a little older than me, she's telling me I used to talk to a lot of people. Like I was very active. I was very open, talking all the time, strangers, everybody. But I remember coming here, I remember being a little more reserved with, how I interact with a lot of people. But I still remember, you still want to bond and you still have friends. So I definitely still had friends. Coming here, it had its challenges, but I was still like more of like I'm a reserved person at first because I don't know. I remember like just talking about it. I remember when, oh man, that just brought up a memory. I remember when I came here in elementary school, and I remember I was sitting at lunchtime by myself inside where everybody was outside, and I'm not too sure why, but I think that was probably part of the like I wasn't comfortable adjusting everybody. But I just remember the first time I think I was not around people. So I was eating lunch just by myself. I don't know why they set that up. I don't know. Maybe because they saw I was maybe very awkward and I wasn't socializing yet, but it just took some time.
For
So it
sure.
did happen. I did get friends, but it was definitely it appears it was tough. Just
Yeah. Now, what about culturally? I know you mentioned like your dad and your mom is from West Africa. So how was it for you watching them adjust to the American life and cultural experience?
I'm not sure. I think they adjusted very well. I don't, my dad was, I think my dad, oh no, that, no, sorry, that actually thought, remind me of something. Stuff pops up in my head as I'm thinking. I remember one thing that was very annoying. Me and my sister would still like have horror stories about it. When my dad, when we came to the States, my dad, for some reason, got this idea we should be like drinking milk, like tall glasses of milk. And I think that advertising came into play because back then in the 90s, it was like, okay, you know, I'm drinking milk. When I grow up, I'm gonna be big and strong. And it
Being
was that like
strong,
big,
yeah.
big milk push. And I don't remember my dad doing this when we were in other countries. All of a sudden, my dad is like making me and my sister drink like tall glass of milk. And it was even if it was bad milk, we was drinking it. So it was, I don't know why that fascination was with there. I just remember that I got sick. I was really sick. Like I had poisoning from that. I remember my sister was really, it was in bad shape from that whole experience. So that was one example that, you know, there's a certain, they're trying to adjust to what they think is supposed to be the culture, but it doesn't fit with us. That was one thing I remember about that was definitely a very weird experience because we didn't have that before. We ate food and did stuff. Of course, we have cereal and stuff, but there's such a focus on that. Why that? And that was one of the things that was very
Interesting.
annoying about trying to adjust. Is like they kind of, it's like we're kind of teach, we're going based on them, but based on how this other culture is telling us how we're supposed to live our life, you know? And I remember one of the other things that was, it was challenging, but that was a little bit more when I grew up still. In my culture, we address people who are close to our parents or people who are considerably older than us as uncle and auntie. Different cultures do that kind of thing. So even like growing up, it still was difficult to then when I have a job to like call somebody by their first name. That was a very weird thing. Like I don't like I if I'm working somebody named John, it was hard even trying to adjust to those kind of things. You know? Other than that, I was still I because of my international student background, I'm used to being around other people from different cultures. So I don't feel it was too hard to adjust. Like I was just too deep into my Nigerian culture that I couldn't adjust because I'm used to, I think it was just I had a different kind of experience
Got you.
where I was like not just stuck in one place. So I could experience other kids who we all spoke English. We could all we kind of just be able to adapt.
That's awesome, man. And having that experience as a young person in experiencing different cultures and being able to travel, I'm pretty sure it had a huge impact on your life. I know for me, my dad, he's no longer alive either. He passed away back in 2018, but my dad was Liberian. But I've never been to Africa. I've never been to Liberia. So my cultural experience was kind of through him and my relationship with him. My mom, she was born in Arkansas. You know what I mean? They met in Detroit. But you could just tell like some of the cultural experiences. Like we'll go over my dad's house, and when we eat, like it's just one big bowl of like rice, and everybody got their spoons and they dig it in and they eat. And it's like this communal aspect, but whereas, my mom's side, like that's not happening. You know what I mean? It's like everybody ain't doing that. But there's some cultural things that I know for my dad, he was sort of a mystery of sorts because he didn't share a lot about his upbringing and his experience. And I'm wondering, like, is that was your dad like that as well?
Very mysterious kind of person. I get my, I guess my cool, collected kind of attitude. I definitely know I got that from him because he was a very cool guy. Like he wasn't, I really think, I don't remember, like I really ever remember him even raising his voice. Just in general. So very cool guy, but mysterious. He would drop some knowledge on you here and there, but now as a man looking back, you know, there times, you know, I wish like, wow, I wish I knew certain things or learned certain things. I wish he was open to share a lot of things about what it takes to, you know, growing up, being a man, and what's, you know, just the step by step, you know, each stage I'd be able to learn what exactly was expected of me and why it's important. And yeah, that would have been like, but he was definitely like he's like your dad, kind of very mysterious, very hidden, man. You're cool. But at the same time, I feel close to you, but I don't feel close to you. You're here, which is good. It's a blessing. A lot of people have the opportunity to have a father even present.
Yeah.
But it was one of those situations where he was there. I mean, he was definitely busy because he had other things going on for himself with the work and working for the United Nations. But then sometimes he was gone for more and more. As older I got, the longer he'd be gone for work. Really? And so sometimes I only get to see him a couple times a year.
Wow.
So you just kind of get a little bit word of wisdom, this and that. Yeah. Then you like, you know, you hang out a little bit, he's out.
Now, how do you think, because I know my dad and I, we had a very distant, because, you know, my mom and my dad, they were divorced when I was like 2 years old. So I never really knew a life with them together. You know what I mean? But we had this distant relationship, but we would talk often. You know what I mean? And growing up, you know, we would go over his house some during the summers and some holidays and different things like that. But as I got older and became an adult, I saw less and less of him, though we talked on the phone like every Sunday. Like, how do you think that shaped sort of you as a man, as growing into, you know, into the man that you are today? Like, you think that how did that impact you negatively or positive?
I think I definitely believe it has some positive impact. The fact that I got to physically see somebody who was active in the home, he definitely represented that breadwinner. And, you know, that's a value that I have that comes from a culture. But just seeing the fact that I know what that looks like. I see where as a man I admire the fact that a man can he worked hard to provide for his family and gave his family a great experience that none of them could have had. They most likely would not have had. Of course, his children wouldn't have it because they're children, but his wife, like she got to then be on his program, and then so where he's going, she's going. So they're living apparently a really good life. She's being introduced to like really prestigious people, you know, in governments, you know. Yeah. So he's on a very high level, and he, you know, I've seen like wow, I get to see a guy who's I guess who's very respected. He's on a high level where he gets to represent a big company, a big organization, and he's also taking care of his family, making sure they're taken care of, and even spending some time with them. Early on, it was good to see that. Like, my father is there, he's active, you know, playing around with him, go play basketball, working out with him or something like that, or having fun with him while he's working out. So it was good to see that. I like that. The fact that I saw this image, I believe that was one of the positive things so it helped me form that template for myself and say like, okay, you know, now that I'm a man, that's something that I like, that's something I respect, something that I value.
Yeah.
And where it was more the negative side was that a lot of stuff I had to learn on my own, which I wish I didn't have to learn on my own because you have a father there. And of course, he's a guy. So if it comes to like things like sexuality, he's a guy.
Yes, sir.
So we're not different. So there are things that clearly he's gone through experience that I could have learned from. Like I never got the, you know, the talk or whatever like that.
Yeah.
So even when it came to things like sexuality, I really didn't know anything except for either what's going to be exposed to me by television or my friends.
Yeah.
So I wish I didn't learn from it growing up about relationships and sex from outside sources.
Yeah.
From that, because then it's like that shaped my attitude that I had towards relationships. So that's one of the things where it's like I felt like though it was good to see it, and it helped me with forming my own values. The negative side was where you had to go through things. You felt you going through your things yourself to learn it for yourself, the ins and outs, or the you know, how do I go about this this world? What is a man supposed to be doing? What
man.
exactly am I supposed to be doing as a man? Period.
Yeah. And you're learning those things from, as you mentioned, those outside sources. Now, what about faith? I know you're a person of faith, and like how was your faith formation within your family structure?
Faith for me, it was one of those things where I remember that I was in a Catholic church fairly when I remember it was in Nigeria, it was before we came to the States, and I remember I was baptized there. I didn't know what was going on. I think I just went along with the flow. But I remember that thing where you get kind of sprinkled and all that. So I remember being baptized in Catholic Church when I was around 8 or 9. And when we came here to the States, my parents were more in the, I don't know how to call it, more evangelical type of church.
Okay.
So I just remember they brought us to church. So we were just, I remember just being brought to church.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what you got, you don't have a choice. So I guess you just, and I went to Catholic school at the same time.
Okay.
So I'm going to Catholic school. I'm learning these things. It's like a ritual. I'm really more in the ritual of these things. Sometimes I'm sure they was inspiring to learn things in the Bible, but it was just like, this is just what I got to go through. I don't have a choice. Like, I don't have a choice of learning certain things in my school, cause that's what they teach me. Or I have a choice. I got to go to church with them because you're just not going to get in trouble. You got to go with the flow. So it wasn't until probably around the age of 19, 20, around there, that's when it became more of a personal search for myself. Because, of course, when you get older I don't have to go to church with you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I can feel if I don't want to or I got something else going on, I don't have to go. But that was when it was more of a, I have more of a personal now desire to connect with God. And a very, very funny story is that happens through a woman. Because I would not be a believer. I just wanted to go to church, inspiring stuff to listen to, but I was not. There was a girl who, I remember when I just got in college, I think she was a Christian. She was the Christian. Clearly, why was it? But I could tell there was some mutual attraction there. I could tell she was into me, and I was definitely into her. Even though I'm like, I just like the fact that she was a believer and she's cute and she likes me. So I remember she sat me down once, and she said to me, I like you and everything, and she said, I don't want to jeopardize my relationship with God.
Wow.
For a relationship. And that really like knocked me off my feet. I was so annoyed. Like I remember even like I remember well sitting. I remember I fell. I don't know. It was kind of like, I don't think because of that, but it just made it so much more awkward that I just happened to fall while sitting down hearing this news. And that was something that definitely shook me. That shook me very hard.
I'm sure.
And looking back on that, I think it was because I had such a desire for, like, I've had such a desire for a deep, meaningful relationship. Like, I wasn't even that kid that was just trying to, trying to sleep around with everybody. Of course, the temptations were there,
sure.
And opportunities was there presenting at different times. But I still was like, I cared so much deeply about having a deeper, meaningful relationship.
Wow.
And to see how that could have possibly in that case, and somebody's like, now I'm not just being rejected for guys, somebody's like, I know that, that pain of rejection where she thinks she's into you, but then, she finds out she's into somebody else.
Yeah.
Now I'm getting rejected for God. I can't measure up. So
she's like, I don't want to compromise.
I can't. She pretty much was like, I don't want to compromise.
Wow.
And I was so angry. And I remember that night, I just remember being so angry. It's just so much rage in my heart. And it's like God spoke to me through that. And I can't remember specifically what God said to me, but it was like, it was something like, so will you serve me now?
Wow.
And what blew my mind is because I was used to, especially growing up in church and, you have certain experiences where you don't feel like there's consistency with the people who believe this stuff. You are saying one thing, but you do something else.
Yeah.
You're not consistent. And that was the first piece of evidence that I could use to say, you know what? somebody's willing to give up pleasure, a worldly pleasure, or give up this relationship just for their connection with God, or it could be their connection with their church, or the fact that they just like, this is not still consistent, wow. You know?
Yeah.
They gave it up. And so it was like, now is my invitation. Say, can you give it up? Because you can't use that anymore. You can't say people aren't real about it. Yeah. Somebody's real about it. And that's something that's a lot of people, it's hard for them to give up. To give up a relationship with somebody that they like for something else, for whatever reason, you know? But I found out some more information from one of her friends. Like, it was like, it had to be more with her denomination, because she's also apostolic and they have specific beliefs and stuff like that. So just, even if there was more things required, they still didn't compromise.
Yeah.
They didn't compromise. I had to realize that, you know what? God has given me so much. And he's calling me now to do the same thing, to follow him and not compromise.
So God used that experience to kind of work on your heart.
Very weird.
Draw you closer to him.
That's one of the very beautiful things about how God works. God can work through just any situation that someone's going through, even if they don't want him, and how he will use the very thing that they're so passionate about in order to get their attention. So he knew the one thing I was very passionate about is relationships. I really was like, so like, hopeful, romantic. I want to just find this woman, this girl. And I'm so in love with being in love and finding this person. And it uses such a huge heartbreak to be like, hey, good. I'm glad I got your attention. Let's look. I want to talk about something.
Because you was feeling her. You feeling this young lady. And this rejection is like, man. But he used it to draw you closer to him. To draw your heart to him. Man. Now, did you ever get the girl?
I trust it. Because it seemed like a bonus. Because it's like, wait. Now that I'm in, now seeking God, this looks like it can make sense. Yeah. It seemed perfect.
Yeah.
Bro, that was heartbreak number. That was heartbreak number two. Because even though my life had changed, it appears she's just not into me. Mm. She's not into me. And I remember that feeling of trying, when you're trying to reach out to this to a girl, and you just feeling that, and you could tell from her she's really not feeling you. She's not feeling you. Like, it's now sounding like I'm a nuisance to try to get attention. And that was another heartbreak experience, because then God got me attention again. God got me attention. And it's like, I had to learn the pain of saying, you know what? I need you to fill this space, because this is what I want, and I can't have it. And I have to let go of it. And that's another thing too. And I was like, it's almost like I'm doing something which is like what I thought she was doing, but now I gotta be the one participating now, because now I am giving up on this person who doesn't want me.
And
I knew I had to let go. That's the part. It was not even the fact that I had to, you know, just accept someone, but it's like I had to let go and then just stop trying to reach out to her. Just let her go. She does not want you. She's not into you. And now, and to let God, to ask God to help me with this thing.
So that broken heart led you to God, and God, you know, he knows how to mend broken hearts, don't he?
Wild. It is wild. Yeah. That is a big deal. That's a big deal. Everybody has their thing, but for me, that was a big thing. That's always been a big thing. Even though I'm single now, that's something I do deeply cherish. And God has used that in many ways to get my attention and say, you know what, you're too much in love.
Yeah.
With this idea, and I need to be the one, because because clearly I'll make her an idol. I'll make one of the women I'm so passionate about.
Yeah.
They will be my God. Wow. You know, because I'll be so in love with just trying to make sure I can have them, please them, even if, and especially if they necessarily are not so into me. It makes me want them even more. Yeah. Now I gotta try to win. And God's like, absolutely not. That's only leads to hurt, more heartbreak. And it's like, I'm trying to make them my gods. And God is like, I'm gonna be your God, and I'm going to satisfy. I'm going to satisfy your need.
Yeah.
So now the boldness and the confidence you have, you don't put another person above him.
Above him, that's right. And I know, you know, some of that far too well, because I think even with the sport of track and field, that sort of became this thing that I wrapped my identity in. Mm. It became sort of a idol in my life. Not sort of, but it did become an idol in my life. But this idol did draw me closer to him because, you know, I growing up, you know, I went to church and different things, but I wasn't, you know, a believer. That didn't happen until I was a student athlete over at Mississippi State, and got invited by a young lady to a campus ministry called the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. What you talk about meaningful relationships, that was one of the things that I desired as well, because I think being a part of a team for so long, you see the value, the belonging that you have as being a part of this team. But I think outside of that team dynamic, I was looking for a place of belonging, outside of that as well, because of some of the things that I was searching for and trying to fill the void in my heart with. And I think being invited into that space where my peers were worshiping, and there was a joy that they had that I didn't know. I knew brokenness. I knew, you know, I knew just, you know, just the hardness of life, but the joy that I saw in them, I'm like, man, I want to experience that joy. And I think that's when the Lord just started working on my heart and being invited into that community and, you know, and developing those meaningful relationships through that campus ministry.
That's very powerful. I think that's pointing to a very deep reality in how God uses us to witness to other people. Because both of what we're saying mm-hmm. is that how we were drawn to have a connection with God through what other people were representing. Yeah. I'm sure other people have had their own personal revelations of it, but that's something that's striking me as very powerful, and how God uses representatives. God wants representatives, because that is actually, I read something that once said that's even a kind and courteous Christian is actually the best argument. And people like to hear like, oh, well, what's going to convince somebody to be a believer? It's actually the representation of a believer, like actually someone who's true to what it is.
Yeah,
that is actually the most convincing thing, is someone who represents what it is.
That's right.
That, like, it's literally the walking proof. So when you say like, I saw something, and you're like, yo, this, I worship this. This is my community. This is what I love. And then you see, well, there's another community, and there's so much joy and representation of what they worship and what they love. You're like, it's something now that's getting, it's got your attention. Now I want to see what's up with this.
Yeah. That team dynamics, you know, being part of that team, it served its purpose. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And being a part of a team, a sports team, is this competitive nature that's involved in that. Whereas being a part of a faith community, there's no competition, man. We all are seeking freedom in the Lord. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah. I think this is a great place to pause for the first part of our two-part discussion. Join us next time for part two. And I'm looking forward to part two of our discussion, because, ladies and gentlemen, we will get deeper. And as we get deeper, listen at your own risk. You will be challenged. You will be encouraged. And you will be empowered to run your race to win. God bless you. Follow the Front Runner Podcast and share with a friend. Also, follow me on Instagram at TheIsaiahMarshall. Subscribe to my YouTube channel, which can be found in the show notes. And while you are at it, be sure to check out all of my released spoken word poetry projects anywhere you stream music. Thank you for supporting my creative journey. This is the Front Runner Podcast. Until next time, bless you.